With sports car racing news and analysis from around the globe, this is the Double Stint Podcast. Here's John DeGeese and Ryan Marine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Double Stint, Sports Car 365 Sports Car Racing Podcast. I'm in Indianapolis. This is Ryan Bereave, John DeGeese joining me from Chicago for the third of four year-in-review episodes that we have for you here in 2020. We've already talked about the FIA World Endurance Championship and the Intercontinental GT Challenge powered by Pirelli, as well as GT World Challenge Europe powered by AWS in the two previous shows. But, John, now it is time to turn the attention to SRO America, so the GT World Challenge America Series, as well as the various Pirelli GT4 America Championships, and maybe a brief mention of the touring car racing that we had this year as well. It was a difficult year, as it was for so many different aspects of motorsports, but I think especially so for GT World Challenge America. The GT4 grids in Pirelli GT4 America were quite strong this year, but since we'll start on the GT3 side, the grid at Circuit of the Americas to open the season was not great, to be entirely honest, and it did not get better from there. Some of that outside of the series control. I do think there was reason to believe that some additional entries might have materialized if it weren't for COVID, but it kind of set the tone, unfortunately, for what was not the best season for the championship, but one that perhaps will set the foundation for future growth.
Yeah, and I think we all look back on that weekend at COTA as really the last weekend before COVID really hit. We were all in the paddock wondering what was going on. There was that weekend, South by Southwest had been was announced that it was being canceled in Austin, which is a huge event for the city. And we were sitting there, and then there were bands of public events, and we were wondering if our event was still going to go forward, and it did. And it was just really, really strange. And I think looking back at that weekend, it sort of did set the tone, unfortunately, for the rest of the season, like you said. And we had, I think, 14 or 15 cars at COTA. But once the restart happened in July at VIR for the second round of the season, it was down into the single digits for GT World Challenge America, unfortunately. And that's kind of what we had been left with. It was a difficult situation all around. We knew GT3 was going to have a lot of change this year in World Challenge with the elimination of the all-pro lineups. There was a lot of hope. There was a lot of optimism that Pro-Am taking center stage would bring in new drivers, new gentleman drivers into the series. And that ultimately didn't really materialize. But I think it's still the season still produced some decent racing. I would honestly say I think GT4 was probably the shining star of SRO America this year. And we'll get to that later in the show. But Ryan, let's start off with the champions in GT World Challenge. I guess you can call them overall champions, as they were awarded on the podium at Indianapolis with Shelby Blackstock and Trent Hindman. They were kind of in a class of their own all year in the silver class in their Acura NSX GT3 Evo. What really stood out to you from your standpoint in Trent and Shelby's run there with the Racer's Edge Acura?
Well, it was dominance this season. There's no question about that. They showed up at Circuit of the Americas and really announced their intentions to dominate the class, and that was on a stronger weekend. Ultimately, they were the lone Silver Cup entry for most of the events. There were a few others that jumped in from time to time, but really their main concern, as they told me several times, was just trying to win overall as often as possible, and by and large, that's what they did. I think of the two, Shelby Blackstock was maybe the more eye-opening to me, just because we knew what Trent Hindman was capable of coming off of an IMSA championship the year before in GT Daytona. And if you've been following sports car racing in the previous few years, you knew how good he was. Shelby had done some sports car racing, some touring car racing as well, but primarily known for what he had done in the junior open wheel category, and to be entirely honest, hadn't really lit the world on fire, despite running with some very good teams and good equipment over the course of his junior career. But he had shown well in sports cars previously and looked really, really comfortable in the Acura NSX GT3 Evo, and from time to time was right there on Trent's pace, more often than not, I would say. And to me, that was the big surprise in a pleasant way of the season. I thought that there would be several Pro-Am lineups that the Am would be strong enough to run with Shelby, That was my thought coming into the season. That's really not what materialized at all, and I think he's done wonders for his reputation, the season that he put together, and to be compared to Trent week in and week out, I think was a bit eye-opening, just how good and how comfortable he is in the GT3 car. And the two of them together were basically untouchable. They were great friends off the track, a great pairing on the track, and absolutely dominant champions if you look at the overall championship, which we really weren't aware was going to be a thing, and then all of a sudden it was. But without a doubt, deservingly so. There was no one in their zip code this season.
Yeah, and I think they would have won overall on more occasions than not had there hadn't been a couple issues over the course of the year. I remember there was a minimum pit stop infringement at one race when there was the minimum pit lane delta was clarified later in the weekend or earlier in the weekend, and the team overlooked it. There was a couple other issues. I think they could have really had a real dominant year had it not been. I think they had five overall wins on the season out of the 10 regular races besides the Indianapolis round. So do you think they would have been winning more had there hadn't been a couple miscues there?
There were a few. The one you mentioned there with the pit lane delta, that happened at Sonoma, and that was, like you said, a case of some changes to the regulations occurring mid-weekend. And as John Maranke, the Racer's Edge team owner, told me, look, all the other teams found it. We didn't. That's on us. But, you know, there was probably a way that the series could communicate this better. And so they were the victim of that to some degree. And again, some of it was self-inflicted, as John alluded to in his comment to me. But there were a few other little hiccups here and there. That's part of racing. It's hard to win overall every single weekend. But I still think even with those small issues, there was no one who approached the level of dominance or perfection that they and the Racer's Edge team put together over the course of the season.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to Pro-Am, Martin Fuentes takes the championship solo, and I think that's one of the big stories of the year because he was paired with Rodrigo Baptista for all but the Indianapolis race, and we probably still don't know exactly what happened there for the final race there, but Baptista was replaced, and Fuentes ended up winning the championship solo.
Yeah, that was a strange one, and I don't know the full story there. I believe there was a bit of acrimony, though, with the parting and what exactly caused it and who is unhappy with who and for what reason, I really can't say. But I can't say because I don't know, not because I don't want to be clear. But that should not detract from the season that Martin and Rodrigo had for the bulk of the season before they were split, obviously, for the Indy round, and Martin, as usual, was the class of the AM field. We've seen him over the years winning AM championships. This was a big step for him up to Pro-Am. He had dabbled in it in the past, but has, again, this year showed that he has some very good pace. On his day, he can run with a lot of the pro field, and that's exactly what he did. The Squadra Corsa team did a good job preparing that car. They were a bit too inconsistent, I think, for my taste, and I'm sure they would say the same thing. There were weekends where they were right there at the pointy end. There were others that they were noticeably absent, and that's going to be a point of frustration, I'm sure. But that said, that was the best championship that we had in GT3 this year, the Pro-Am championship. They faced a good challenge from the DXDT Racing duo. We had George Kurtz and Colin Brown in one of the cars, Ryan Dial joining David Askew in the other, and those were both good lineups, and there were some others that jumped in from time to time, too. Kyle Marcelli and Martin Barkey racing together once again, at least at the start of the season. That was at the first round at COTA, and there were a couple others that popped in and out. The Windward team was one that had a lot of different lineups that they utilized that could run towards the front and frequently did, but of that group, the Squadra Corsa pairing of Fuentes and Baptista, at least for most of the season, was the best one, and they came out on top with a performance that was good enough to clinch the championship at Indianapolis. They didn't get the result that they were looking for in that 8-hour race, but I think their main mission that day was to clinch the Pro-Am title for Martin, and they did just that.
Yeah, definitely. And moving on to the AM class, like Silver, it was a class with not many cars throughout the season, and it was kind of another runaway victory. But this one was to Fred Poordad and Max Root, which proved to be a bit of a revelation of the year with this pairing.
I think that's what you got to take away from the AM class in 2020. Max Root and Fred Poordad, for that matter, drove very well and had a couple of drives that that showed what he was capable of in his big step up into GT3 cars. I think he had done one GT3 race at Bathurst, and that hadn't gone terribly well a couple of years prior. But other than that, had been doing Porsche Cup racing. And Max Root, who came from the same background, a youngster that we knew was fast, but we didn't know a whole lot more about. And to me, he was the revelation of the season, because there were weekends where when he was qualifying with the pros, he would be right up in their midst, right up towards the very front. He could run with them during the race. Ultimately, I wish we had seen more cars in the class, although, frankly, I think this is a lineup that really, by the end of the year, should have been considered Pro-Am, and effectively was. They did make that jump late in the season after they had already clinched the AM title. So I think, yeah, if you're looking for something to take away, it's definitely what Max Root did. He looks like he's got the makings of a star of the future. We saw him go and run at Le Mans last year. He's got some big plans for 2021 as well. Hopefully we see him back in SRO. But without a doubt, it was a great season to see what he and Fred and the Wright Motorsports team were able to put together.
So what would be your GT3 standout moment of the year if you had to pick one right now?
Well, I think to me it really was just the return to racing at VIR, because we got done with everything at COTA, and then immediately the next week was St. Pete, and that's really when the rug got pulled out from under all of us, wondering what the future of motorsports was going to look like in 2020. Would we get back to the track at all? And when we did, what would it be like? And so for me, being there on site at VIR, going through the new protocols that were in place, the new app that SRO America put into place as well to try and help with the social distancing and monitoring the interactions of people during an event, I thought was quite interesting. And just to see a grid of GT3 cars at all was a success. I think especially if you go back to that time, we really did not know who would answer the bell. And while it was not the size of a grid that we would ideally like to see, I think given the circumstances, it was serviceable. And just seeing the cars on track again, seeing the friends from the paddock again, that to me stands out more than anything else. And it set the tone then for the rest of the year. And again, like we talked about, not the number of cars that we would have liked, but we did go racing. And once we got back to racing, the schedule that the SRO announced was the schedule that we ran. And there's not a lot of series around the world that can say that. So I do give them a lot of credit. I think all of that got started. The proof of concept, really, that we could go back to racing happened there at VIR. And for me, that's what stands out the most.
Well, for me, Ryan, I would have to say probably the first COTA race. The second one obviously replaced one of the other canceled races later in the year, and that was run under COVID-19 protocols and everything. But just the feeling before the storm, it's like, again, this was no fault at all from SRO America. There was no fault from anybody. It's just the way the world was, and it was a really surreal feeling being in the paddock that first weekend, knowing that we had a possible pandemic. I think at that time it wasn't even called a pandemic, or maybe it was at one point in the early March, but these everything blends in, sure, these days. So, but for me, it was just the feeling of, you know, is this the only race we're going to get in this year? Is Sebring going to happen the next weekend, for instance? Obviously it didn't. What's the rest of the year going to look like? And like you said, I think we have to commend everybody at SRO America, Greg Gill, Stefan Rattel, the whole organization, for having as complete of a season as they did. You know, barring a couple canceled rounds, like you said, everything got in as scheduled. Some of the races were moved around, but I think just it's unfortunate we don't have any standout moments on the track for GT World Challenge. But I'm personally hoping next year will be a change for that.
I hope so as well, and I think there's reason to believe that could be the case. That certainly was a surreal weekend there, too, just watching the news. This was right when it was starting to kind of trickle in that this might affect us in North America. We already knew about the impact COVID had had, although I think it was still called coronavirus back then. That's another thing that's changed a lot over the last couple of months. But and then seeing South by Southwest canceled, wondering if our event was going to be affected. Yeah, it was the start of a really strange few weeks where our whole world shifted around us.
Yeah. So with GC3 driver of the year, I'll go first. I'd have to say it's Max Root. Just looking from his performance, obviously being in an AM car, that was, you know, difficult because you could almost call that a pro-AM car. And later in the season, it did, obviously, once they were upgraded. But I think he had some really good standout drives, really talented young driver. What about you, Ryan?
I think that's it. I think you're exactly right for the reasons you mentioned and some of the things I talked about earlier. I think the series was in a tough spot when this pairing was announced because we really didn't know a lot about Max. There was a good chance that he was going to prove that he would have been capable of being rated as a pro, but we didn't know that for sure given his relative lack of experience and coming from Porsche Cup. So I think they did the right thing where they started the season, and I think it was also appropriate that by the end they were running as a pro-am entry. But to see him go toe-to-toe with some established sports car stars like Trent Hedman and Colin Brown and Ryan Dial, among others, that popped in and out of the series throughout the course of the season, I thought that was the revelation of the year. He absolutely blew me away. I talked earlier about Shelby Blackstock, and I think he deserves an honorable mention as well because I think he raised his stock, no pun intended, in a lot of people's eyes throughout the course of this season because he was so constantly compared to a star like Trent Hedman and compared quite favorably. So those two stand out to me, but Max Root above the rest for sure.
And in terms of GT3 race of the year, what would it be for you?
It's kind of a cop-out answer because it's part of GT World Challenge America, but it only sort of was, I guess, with the Indianapolis 8-hour. Remember, a lot of the teams that did not have championships to race for basically opted out of those points because there was a small competitive advantage to what you could do from a lineup perspective if you were in that race as an Intercontinental GT Challenge entrant instead. Nevertheless, it was part of the championship. Championships were decided there, and having an international grid was awesome. It was the best car count, quite obviously, we had this season. Getting to race at Indianapolis, which is just down the street from where I live, is awfully nice as well, I have to say. And to see something historic with an endurance race, a sports car endurance race at Indy, was really neat. And I think having an event like this that is part of the championship, I hope that stays the case moving forward. I think that there's some value to that you can build this championship around. I think given the difficulties of the year, it actually was a pretty successful event and really laid the foundation for bigger things to come.
Yeah, you took it right from me. I was 100% in agreement with Indy 8-hour. It was great to see the international entries. Of course, there was a lot of questions over how many European teams would come over. There were only a handful, but still we had a good race in GT3 with the Valkenhorst. BMW ended up winning. They obviously led that sort of helped them sort of charge into the championship for Intercontinental GT Challenge powered by Pirelli, as you and Dan reviewed on last week's show. But it was a great event overall. A lot of different rules within rules, like you said, that made it sort of difficult and challenging to follow at times. But I think there's a great foundation to build on for this event for the years to come. Anything else to add about GT World Challenge from the year, Ryan?
Well, I think we'll talk more about it when we get to the end of the show and start looking at what's to come for the future. Obviously, this was not the year that the organizers hoped it would be. The move to eliminate the all-pro lineups didn't seem to have the effect that they hoped it would, and I think there was reason to believe that it might make a difference. I'm not sure it cost us a ton of cars because I'm not really sure where the pro cars were going to come from anyway. There might have been a handful, and it would have helped, but it still would have been a far cry from some of the heights, I suppose, of the GT3 era of Pirelli World Challenge and into the SRO ownership. But I think it was an experiment worth taking just because it was pretty clear what was working, or what they were trying to do before wasn't working quite as well as they would want either. And I think we got some information on how this plays out this year. Hopefully it informs the decisions for next year. Hopefully a lot of these teams and drivers that either had their programs truncated or they were forced to sit out entirely in 2020 are all the more hungry to be back a part of it with the return of pro lineups as well for next year. So I think above all, this is going to be a season of transition and one that there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from. And above all, I guess even above that, would be the fact we got a season in. And in this year, that's not a small thing and something that ought to be celebrated.
Yeah, when you look at some of the other SRO series in Asia in particular, right. You know, they didn't even they had the whole season canceled and it was completely out of their hands as well. But something that should be commended upon for all involved. Moving on to GT4 America, Pirelli GT4 America, that is, we had the Sprint and Sprint X series again, and I guess the final season in that dual format. We'll get to that a little bit later on the future of the class structure for 2021. But champions again, we have Michael Cooper in Sprint with the Pro, Michael Dinan in Sprint in AM, Colin Mullen, Jared Andretti in Sprint X Silver. Dinan repeated again with Robbie Foley in Sprint X Pro Am, and then Sean Gibbons and Zach Anderson in Sprint X Am. I guess we'll just start at the top there, Ryan, with Sprint Pro, a real dominant effort from Michael Cooper. There's not much more to say other than that.
Yeah, he was tremendous, and the Black Dog Speed Shop crew seemed to really have their heads wrapped around the McLaren platform that it took them a little while to get figured out last year in their first year with it, but they hit the ground running, were really, really strong. Michael Cooper, especially early on, did have some decent competition in the pro ranks. Spencer Pompelli, Jared Andretti, Drew Stavely. And Drew, I thought, was really impressive in his first year as a pro. Bookended the season with wins, came out and won at COTA, and then didn't win again, if memory serves, until the final race of the season at Indy, but was constantly a thorn in Michael's side, as was Spencer Pompelli for most of the season until TRG pulled its entry. At a certain point, Jared Andretti opted to focus on his Sprint X program to the detriment of the Sprint program as well, so it left us with a depleted pro field and answered one of the questions that I think both of us have had over the last couple of seasons. How long would they continue with both Sprint and Sprint X? I remember it seemed initially they were going to give it basically a trial year to see which one was more successful, more popular, and then ultimately kill off the loser in that equation. But both were so well populated back in 2019 that there was no way to do that, and they continued forward in 2020. Unfortunately, I have to say, and we'll talk about what the future holds for the single driver format, but it comes to an end effectively in GT4 at the end of this year. And by the midway point in the season, it seemed pretty much inevitable with the pro entries dwindling down to next to nothing towards the end. I don't think that should take away from what Michael Cooper did, especially in some of those races he had with Spencer Pompelli. They were thrilling door-to-door battles a lot of the time. Michael always just seemed to have a little bit extra on a late race restart or on the start of the race or whatever to grab the track position and was able to hold the lead from there, whether or not he was fighting Andretti or Pompelli or Drew Stavely. But that said, there really wasn't the kind of competition that we would have hoped. I thought GT4 Sprint last year was the best series in the SRO America portfolio in the pro category in particular. But losing the pro effort from the Panos certainly hurt, and a couple others that dropped out as well. The Robinson Racing Group comes to mind. So it left us with something that was a bit unsatisfying, but I don't think it should take away from the success that Cooper had this season. And Michael Dinan, what more can be said? He was just dominant this season. Clearly the best AM across both GT4 categories, as we'll get to in a moment. And had to fight for it, no question about it. There were some good challenges at various times, but consistently he was always at the front. Really seemed to mesh well with the Aston Martin, and the Flying Lizard folks put a good car under him, and he took advantage of it.
Yeah, and moving on to Sprint X, we had the Silver Cup champions, which I guess could be crowned as the overall in the series. Not too sure how that went, but Colin Mullen and Jared Andretti getting it done with Andretti Autosport McLaren there.
Yes, they did, and it came down to the wire, and we'll get to that, I think, in a little bit in my race of the year for GT4, but it was a good battle that they had. Really was not clear that they were going to be the ones to come out on top in that one. They were in a great fight with the ST Racing pairing of Nick Whitmer and Harry Gottsacker, and it seemed like every time one of them would have an off day, the other would capitalize, and then the next day it would flip around. They just could not separate from one another. It ultimately was a 6-point difference at the end of the season. We saw strong performances from time to time from Samantha Tan and John Miller and the other ST Racing BMW. Nikolai Elganian and Mads Siljahaug did really well in their Marco Polo Motorsports entry at various times. There were others that came to the fore. The Panos at the end of the year when it made its unexpected return. We saw a nice effort from Parker Chase and Roman DeAngelis. They actually won one of the races at Indy this year. Dexter Racing showed well from time to time. So there definitely were some exciting things in the class this season, and the battle for the championship in the silver class was as good as it gets. So congratulations certainly to Mullen, who I thought was the breakout star last year. He and Jarrett again proved to be a great combination. Maybe not as dominant as they would have liked, fewer times on the overall podium than they would have liked, but more than enough to get the job done in the silver class.
Yeah, and moving on to Pro-Am, Dinan and Foley seemed like a really potent combination. You know, you had Robbie on the box helping Michael in the sprint races. Then he got behind the wheel in the Sprint X in a different chassis from Flying Lizard Motorsports. Another really strong run for those guys.
Yeah, they were. They were absolutely phenomenal in both categories, but it was a lot closer in Sprint X, just 2 points the margin at the end of the season. They were able to hold off Matt Travis and Jason Hart for the championship, which means Travis and Hart come up just short in the final race of the season for the second consecutive year after just an incredible start to the season. It was really the midway point in the season in Sprint X that Dinan and Foley started to catch fire, but once they did, it was hard to stop them. They rattled off 4 straight wins at one point. They had to miss one round at Road America due to a conflict for Dinan's schedule, but if you factor that out of the equation, they won 5 in a row. They won something like 5 of their last 6 starts and just closed the season on a tear. I thought Dinan's development this year was as impressive as anything we saw in the whole SRO America paddock. And the combination with Robbie Foley clearly was a good one. They've got a great relationship off the track. Robbie's been able to get the most out of Michael with his coaching over the last season. And I think they're going to be a pairing to watch as long as they stay together.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, AM in Sprint X, Sean Gibbons, Zach Anderson for NOLA Sport. That's a really good story there because they didn't know they were going to be in for the full season. Actually, they missed the last race, I think, due to budget issues. But considering how far they got in the season and how strong of a pairing they were, it was a remarkable run.
Yeah, they had already clinched the championship going into Indianapolis. And so because I think they were costing the team owner a little bit of money to keep going, he was basically running them in part out of his own pocket in order to chase this championship. Once it was wrapped up, we didn't see them run the final 2 races. They were still on site helping out the other NOLA Sport team members, but they were not driving themselves. And I thought this was the story of the year. It was so fun to watch them. They were having a blast. For Gibbons, he's been around the paddock for quite a while, racing primarily with TRG, but comes over to NOLA Sport and instantly was really strong. They swept the weekend at Circuit of the Americas. I don't believe Sean had won a pro race before that, so you could tell how much it meant to him, how excited he was about that accomplishment. And then to get paired with Zach Anderson, a young man who had been out of motorsports basically for 12 years, had been doing some karting, did some club-level racing, tried to give it a go when he was younger, ran out of money, ran out of opportunities, but stayed in contact with Jason Hart, who is another driver on this team, was paired with Matt Travis, who we talked about earlier. They've been kind of in a mentor-mentee relationship for a decade plus at this point, and Jason always promised Zach that if an opportunity should arise, he would recommend him for it, and this was that opportunity. It came about, and Zach seized it with both hands. He was very fast, very consistent, didn't show that he'd been out of the car for over 10 years, and was a breakout performer this season, no question about it. No drama in this championship. They won by nearly 100 points despite not running the final 2 races over James Rappaport and David Walker. Well, actually, Derek DeBoer and James Rappaport, excuse me. And I just love that story. I talk to them every weekend just to get an update that, are you going to be at the next one? We sure hope you are. We love telling your story. And I think the reasons for that are obvious.
Yeah, a great run for the Trattori wine-sponsored Porsche there. So for you, Ryan, what would be your GT4 standout moment of the year?
It's kind of similar to what we talked about earlier with that first weekend at Circuit of the Americas. It's just you fast forward one weekend and go to St. Pete, and this is the most surreal experience of my post-college career. It was absolutely unreal to be there on site at St. Pete. I had driven down because I had planned to be at Sebring the following week and staying with some relatives in Florida in between. And my parents actually had come down with me. They were going to be going to the race at St. Pete. And we're driving in the car the night before, I guess it would have been Thursday night, and everything is getting canceled. That's the night that Rudy Gobert of the NBA got his positive COVID test, and basically all of sports were shutting down. And it was so strange seeing him every time I refreshed Twitter on that drive. And then you get there, and we're all kind of trying to go about our business as usual. The teams are unloading, doing my normal conversations, trying to get notes for the broadcast. But everyone is just wondering, are we even going to race? And then the press conference was held. Yes, we are going to race, just with no fans. Thought, okay, good to know, and we'll get back to it tomorrow. And then, you know, practice is happening. Cars are on track. I was standing in turn one, just behind the fence on the outside of the track with Greg Kramer, who's on the broadcast with me, and Ray Sorensen from Black Dog Speed Shop. He was watching his cars go through when all of a sudden a red flag came out, and no one knew why. And cars were sent back to the paddock. About 15 minutes later, we were told, it's all done. You're going home. And it was just the most bizarre set of circumstances that I'll never forget. That one is painted indelibly in my mind, and I think maybe sums up my 2020 experience more than anything else.
Yeah, that's something for sure. For me, a little bit on a brighter note, I would say the standout moment in GT4 America, for me at least, was the rise of Aston Martin. It seemed like it came out of nowhere with this new Vantage GT4. We had multiple entries in both Sprint and Sprint X. Obviously, Flying Lizard, also Reardon Racing, the new B-Sport team, RS1. There was 5-6 cars at every race. They were all doing extremely well on track. Real great work for the North American operators for customer support for Aston Martin at CSJ Motorsports. I think they did a tremendous job not only selling the cars and convincing the amount of customers to make the switch or start up new operations, but also to have the amount of success they had throughout the year. And I think you're going to see the grid even grow even more with more Astons next year.
It's a great call. It really is. And everybody I've talked to who has worked with CSJ on various Aston programs has had nothing but positive things to say about them. And they basically were no one had ever heard of them when they got the deal. I remember meeting Cy Jerry, who, and he and his wife run this program. I remember meeting them in Las Vegas last year and kind of being a little bit surprised and not thinking a whole lot more of it until we got to COTA and there were all these Astons on the grid, and clearly they were doing something right. It's pretty rare to hear such unanimous praise for any entity, especially one that was so new, but that's what I found. And the proof is all the programs that were announced, the additional ones that we expect, and the performance that they had, not just in SRO, but also over in IMSA, which we'll talk about next week a little bit as well. But you're right. I thought that was a great story and one worth keeping an eye on, because I think it's going to continue.
Yeah, that's for sure. So moving on to GT4 Driver of the Year, I'll go first, and we might have the same one again. We're not too sure, but for me, it's Michael Cooper. 11 wins out of 16 races, including a six-race win streak in the middle of the season. There's not much more to be said about than that.
Yeah, he was really, really good, and I was very close to going that direction as well. I do think it was a bit of a shame there wasn't as much competition this year as there had been in the past, because I think he still would have done very well, even if there had been more pro cars entered. But I think Michael Dinan gets the nod for me. He's not the caliber of driver as Michael Cooper. He's the AM in an AM lineup, but he was the best AM consistently, both in Sprint and Sprint X. 17 wins across those two series as well as two championships. Such an improvement as well year to year. There were times at year one where he looked like he might have been in over his head a little bit and had the really bad accident at VIR. He exercised those demons with a great weekend at VIR this year. But I thought his improvement was remarkable, and his pace as an AM was really, really good. No one else in the AM category could touch him. So for me, it's Michael Dinan, Michael Cooper, an honorable mention. Zach Anderson, who I talked about as well, probably deserves a bit of a nod. He was really good paired with Sean Gibbons this season. So I thought he deserves some recognition. But for me, it's Dinan who stands out.
And in terms of GT4 race of the year, I would go with one of the races at VIR for sprint. I believe it was the first one of the weekend. It's actually the first race of the restart, I think, for SRO America, at least in GT4 America, that weekend. It was Spencer Pompelli getting the win over Cooper. I just remember a really, really close fought battle between the two of them, back and forth on the last couple laps. It was a really, really close fought a battle there. What would be your race of the year, Ryan?
That's a good call. I'd kind of forgotten about that, but when you bring it up, I do remember how good that was, and it was some redemption for Spencer, too, because he looked like he was going to dominate that weekend at VIR back in 2019, but had some tire issues that cost him dearly, not just there, but also in the championship hunt. So for him to get a win there, I know was quite meaningful. For me, though, I think the race of the year was the final race of the year for Sprint X at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Both the Silver and Pro-Am Championship battles were settled in that race. Both shifted dramatically at various times in the race. I think there were some penalties that came in. Drivers who they had been running towards the front, then they were in the back and had to drive their way back through. I can't even remember all the details. I just remember being overwhelmed by it, trying to do the math on who I need to talk to post-race to interview the champion, and it kept changing in both of these classes. And that's what you want as a spectator. It makes it a little harder as the TV broadcaster, but I enjoyed it immensely. It was a great race. I thought that track worked really well for the GT4 cars, too, and we had a bunch of good GT4 races at IMS this year, but that one stands out. Recency probably helps because it's more fresh in my mind than some of the others, but that second IMS Sprint X race was outstanding, and to have the stakes that were up for grabs too, with both championships in Silver and Pro-Am that kept swapping back and forth, I thought it was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and briefly, we're going to mention some of the TC America champions. I guess there was one driver in SRO America competition that was more dominant than Michael Cooper, and that was Tyler Maxson taking the TCR title. I think he only lost, I think, three or four races over the course of the season, and in a real dominant fashion in the Copeland Motorsports Hyundai. What about the other class champions, Ryan, in TC America?
Yeah, Tyler was awesome, and I think is about to embark on a big career over in IMSA in the TCR ranks. Other classes in TC America, James Clay, longtime competitor in a bunch of different series, and did a great job to come away with the TC championship. It was pretty hard fought this year. Toby Grahovic, among others, were in the mix at various points, and I think that class has a lot to be excited about for the future with some more turnkey options to compete with the BMW coming from other manufacturers like Honda as well as Mazda. We saw them towards the end of the season on the grid, needing some development, but certainly on their way. And then TCA, Kevin Bohm was awesome in the second half of the season. He won his first race at Road America and basically swept the rest of the year from there. Didn't quite do it, but went on a tear, and it was enough to clinch the TCA championship. He's one who is an engineer for Honda, works in their Ohio manufacturing facility, does a lot of test and development driving for road cars, specifically with the NSX, actually, and is a longtime SCCA competitor, but made the step up into pro racing this year and took to it quite nicely, to say the least, with a TCA championship. So congratulations to all three. Really good racing in TC America this year. And some changes to the class format for next year are on the way, but I think there's a lot to be excited about in the fact that we've seen the TC America concept exported now to France, actually. Looking ahead to next year is really exciting, and I think the SRO globally is taking a close look at what Jim Jordan and the TC America staff have done in the U.S., and that's something they're looking to implement elsewhere.
Yeah, it's really exciting to sort of see that platform expand globally, because there wasn't per se a technical standard for this, you know, seen outside of SRO America for so many years. And now, thanks to Stefan Rattel and the whole SRO global empire, you're starting to see some of the benefits of having a global series as in SRO to see some of these series in action. So looking forward to seeing what the French championship can produce, and maybe some other series throughout the world in the coming years. Finally, we'll look a little bit in the future. I know, Ryan, you talked about some changes for GT World Challenge America powered by AWS for next year. Anything else to add about that? And then also looking at the debut of GT America in 2021.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time this year thinking about what the difference today is from when we had massive GT3 grids in what was then Pirelli World Challenge. And to me, the thing that stood out is you had factory-backed efforts running in PWC back in the day that bolstered the grid in a huge way. It opened the door for teams to run a pro car and an am car, or a pro and a pro am car. I guess it wouldn't have been pro am because it was single driver back then, but you get my point. And so readmitting pro drivers to and the pro class to GT World Challenge America, I think, has the potential to be a boost in this way. But I do think the SRO is going to need to do something to incentivize participation to its manufacturer partners. And I don't know what that could be, but my hope is that the continued growth of the GT World Challenge concept being a manufacturer's championship run in the various GT World Challenge series across the world, now including Australia, as well as Europe and Asia, hopefully again for 2021, that might be an incentive to see a factory-backed effort in the pro class. That might also help incentivize some pro-am and am entries as well, and give us some growth in the class. That's really what we need. This is supposed to be the top class. It's supposed to get top billing. And the cars are phenomenal. The driving lineups have been and can be again. But this year, the way things were, frankly, is not sustainable. So hopefully that's a change that can help, and we'll see some growth for next year, and maybe some more factories coming to play. That would be a big boost to the championship for sure. Regarding GT America, I'm really curious to see what it's going to look like. I know there's a lot of optimism here. It's a playground for bronze drivers to race against other bronze drivers. Mixed class, which I think is interesting as well. Older spec GT3 cars mixed in with GT2 and GT4. Frankly, I think this is a better home for GT2 than what we saw last year when GT Sports Club ran at the same time as GT World Challenge America for the first 40 minutes or whatever it was, and then came in the middle of those races. That really was not ideal. So hopefully this works a little bit better. Speaking to some team owners, they have reason to be optimistic that the bronze customers will see some value in this, especially with the shortened race weekends. They were longer last year, in part to make up for lost time and try and pack in more races on a weekend due to the pandemic and canceling some of the rounds and trying to get to the same number of races in fewer rounds, if that makes sense. So anyway, all of this to say, I think it's exciting. I'm curious what it's going to look like, and I'm very excited that it's going to be a part of the IndyCar weekend in Nashville. I wish this series would go back to some of that and share some of those weekends with IndyCar. It's a chance to share the spotlight a little bit and get some attention on the series that I think, frankly, it deserves.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ryan. And I'm really excited for GT America. There seems to be a lot of drivers already putting their foot in the door and committing to this single driver sprint format. And obviously with GT4 sprint going away, you're going to lose the pro drivers like Michael Cooper or Jared Andretti, Drew Stavely, even for that matter, of race being able to race solo in a GT4 spec car. But I think this is the right path for SRO America, especially looking at maybe some GT3 drivers, some bronze rated drivers, maybe double dipping between GT World Challenge America and GT America. That's possible. So hopefully we can grow the grid in GT World Challenge and put on some good racing in GT America as well.
That's definitely the hope. So that's a look back on 2020 in SRO America. Hope you enjoyed it on the show here this week. We've got one more year in review episode coming your way next week, when we will look back primarily on the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. a little more to be said as well about some of the other championships in the IMSA portfolio. We'll then be turning the calendar to 2021, and that means the first regular episode following the Year in Review episodes is now just a couple of weeks away. That's when we'll be getting back to your listener questions and comments once again. So thanks to all of you who have submitted them here in the last couple of weeks. Sorry we haven't been able to address them on these shows, but we'll be getting back to them here very soon. So please feel free to send in your thoughts for our first episode of 2021, and we'll get to all of your questions and comments then. You can use the hashtag AskDoubleStint on Twitter, as well as leaving comments and questions in the comment section of the podcast page at sportscar365.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Back with you next week to recap the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship 2020 Year in Review.